from the department. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning to you all. Today we are just proving how ICT is important to us, you know, and sometimes we should become very much illiterate when it comes to everything. No one could stand up and do what has been done here. And I think as a committee of faith education, it shows me the need of making sure that the issue of ICT are being taken care of. Yeah, we might not have the generation that sometimes comes to iterate as well, as we just exposed ourselves to be this morning, where we couldn't even start the meeting because no one could operate these machines that are in front of us. But otherwise, thank you very much, from the department, for coming. We are eagerly waiting for the report today on the first quarter of our financial year. And I'm emphasizing that because we must know exactly that the briefing that you are getting today is the first quarterly report that goes up to the 30th of June. Notwithstanding the fact that yes, there is a lot that you are waiting from the department. We need to look at their increment strategy plan and look at the targets to say are we on track with what they have targeted and what we have agreed upon. But bearing in mind that the report is for the first quarter and there's so much that they still need to do to finish up the year. But today it will give us a sense of where the department is going, that we're still on the right track, what are the shortcomings and where are the areas we are doing well this far. And after that, we'll be getting another presentation on inclusive education. I know that's one of the presentation again that we have been looking at, and we have been looking forward to hear what is the progress when it comes to that. But today, allow me to very strict on time, because honorable members, no matter what you do, we must look at our minutes and pass our minutes. So at least the presentations are not that long. It's just one quarter. An hour will be enough for the presentation on the first quarter report. Then we go to another hour on inclusive education, that we have our 3 minutes to pass our minutes. So let me not really waste a lot of time. DG, can I hand over to you to lead us on the discussions on the first quarter report?
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. First quarter will be presented by the Minister and the Secretary will do the financial statement. This one will indicate that the first quarter will be completed when we went towards the election. We will continue in which we waited for the appointment of the new administration. I think some of the activities
Thank you, DG, and Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and other members of the department. Today we'll be taking you through this quarter report. As the Chair has already indicated, we'll be outlining the first quarter of assessments for the period 2014-2015. The presentation will take, we will take most of the presentation as read because we have recirculated the narrative report so that we can allow for more engagement with it. So we will be limiting our presentation to 20 minutes, Chair. We'll be taking you through a summary of the performance indicators and the program of performance, going into each of the programs in terms of the details of the strategic plan and the objectives for the period. And then afterwards, as the DJ has indicated, we'll be going through the financial report. I'm going to hand over immediately to Mr. Mayor to take us through the report, and then we'll come back on Sunday. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Member. I'm going to take you through the first quarter report for 2014-15 based on the annual business plan for the same financial year. The DDG has already given an introduction. We will do a summary of based on performance indicators and a synopsis of some of the achievements that we have made in each program. But that doesn't take care of everything that we have done. you've read the report, then you know that some areas are in the report but not necessarily in the presentation. And then the past due will be done by the CFO. Generally, just to summarize how the objectives and the indicators and targets of the GBE are structured, we've got task programs, and in those task programs, those are the number of indicators we have per program, and the percentage that we constitute in the whole, you know, if we take the total package together. As you can see, the biggest program there is program 4, then program 1, then program 2. This slide just shows you the color coding that you will see as you go through the indicators that have been achieved. We've done this because we've got only 2 quarterly targets. And what we decided as a department is that even those indicators that are annual, we will report progress if there's something that has happened during the quarter. Some things are targeted for the third quarter achievement or fourth quarter or second quarter, but we will give an indication of what has happened. And for areas where we've got quarterly targets, if a target has not performed over 50%, if it was a quarterly target, then we will color it red. But if it's an annual target, we will track progress as we see it. We will make all annual targets as white, and then record progress as we go along. But once we reach over 50%, the amber color will be reflected. And when something has already been fully achieved, whether it be in the first quarter or third quarter, it will be reflected as green. Straight away into program 1, I will go to the indicators for program 1 on the number of officials that participated in development activities. Target 315 is an annual target. By third quarter, we had achieved 121. Number of internships implemented, the target is 65, and the quarter 1 output is 15, is an annual target also. Value of disclosure forms by senior managers. The target, the original target throughout years, it has always been 31st May of a financial year. And the output for this year is GPSA postponed, or let me say, shoot out a circular, I should say, because of elections, the disclosure form should be submitted at a later date, which was 29th of August or 31st of August. And by the time this report was prepared, we did not have that report because we reported at the end of July, at the end of June, beginning of July. So we didn't reflect any output thus far. It will be fully reflected in the second quarter because it has been processed as we speak now. Signing of settlement agreements, it was the same thing. Same circular also referred to signing of settlement agreements by SMS members. Not just for GBD, for the whole government. Number of audit reports signed. The target, which is annual, was 39. For the first quarter, the output is 9 reports that have been finalized and signed. A report tied to South Africa's role and participation in multilateral bodies and international organizations in support of the development of the education system. We target 2 reports in the financial year. The first one will be ready after the end of the second quarter, and the second one after the end of the fourth quarter. So we are preparing for the second quarter one, as you see there in the output. Management performance assessment tool is something that is implemented every year. During the first quarter, what we got in terms of that process was the final result or the final score of the department, and subsequently that an improvement plan was developed in preparation for the cycle that is beginning now this month and due for submission at the end of this particular month. And maybe let me hasten to say, comparatively speaking, we did better than we did in the previous year. 2013 results were better than 2012 results in terms of our compliance to administrative and management functions. Now, in program 1, the highlights in HR was 36 appointments that were made, 8 of which were senior management posts with 2 directors and 6 directors. Implementation of the ICT framework. Completing the refreshment architecture for the data center hosting the department's critical business application, and we've implemented the refreshment of the LAN data center and installed the placement hardware. The MTech cycle was concluded for the previous year, that's why I said the results came back and we did better than last year. We had an improvement plan which was meant to assist managers to prepare for the current MTech cycle. Under monitoring and evaluation, the key thing that we are doing there is
utilizing the or processing data that comes from the Central Household Survey, because we utilize it in some of our indicators. Internal audit, they have completed 9 assurance engagements and consulting engagements. 2 forensic investigations were also completed, and the departmental risk register for 2013 financial year was signed. 1 committee meeting has taken place thus far. 12 committee meetings. In terms of international relations, we have engaged in bilateral engagements with 7 African countries, 4 European countries, and with South America and Asia. A follow-up visit to one of the fastest growing countries in the world, that is China, was attended by one of our DDGs, Mr. Mueli, specifically to see how the department can benefit from the partnership in the area of math, science, and technology. The process of teaching Mandarin, which is a Chinese language, implemented in Limpopo schools, is at an advanced stage. In terms of communication, we've informed the public and stakeholders on an ongoing basis on sector policy, programs, and interventions. And that's why we've had a two-one topic. And the number of groups that have been attended so far, in April 20, in May 29, and in June 32. 21 media releases and advisories were also issued out during the quarter. The DBE, or the department, continues to strengthen its web presence as a platform for e-communication. Our social media communication has increased. Facebook, Twitter, the numbers speak for themselves there. And we have also uploaded on YouTube the videos which show that our viewing has actually increased. And our email box has received over 2,000 messages as reflected in the report. Our website also has seen over 5 million visits. Legal services, we've advised the minister through correspondence on 14 issues. We scrutinized 7 contracts in the form of 5 memoranda of understanding, 1 implementation protocol, and 1 memorandum of agreement. Managing litigation in only 23 ongoing cases against the department. We've provided legal opinion on the evaluation of some tenders, those codes are standing for tenders, and also on the termination of a contract for hiring of space from UNESCO. Currently, there are pieces of legislation that are under review in the Basic Education Amendment Bill, relating to the exemption of payments from payment of school fees, safety regulation, major bills, and personal arbitration matters. 285 teachers and 42 subject advisors have been trained on those pieces of legislation. We are moving on to program 2. Development of interactive workbooks. Our target was 10 will be developed. At the moment, the output there shows that the process was ongoing by the time of reporting. This proposal has been done. Supply chain was busy with finalization of the tender. On the percentage of learners who obtained a national senior certificate, this is last year's result, as you may know, because we have a routine metric now. And the target that has been set will only be achieved in the third quarter, which is after December. Percentage of grade R workbooks that have been printed, delivered to learners in public secondary schools, our target was between 97 and 100%. In quarter one, the output thus far reflects that electronic copies of printed workbooks have been done. Hard copies have also been printed, and the print order has been signed off, and the delivery, POD for delivery for terms 3 and 4, and remedial for 1 and 2 has also been done, because sometimes during the first term you've got extra learners coming into some provinces, increasing the number of learners who are going to need extra books. Percentage of grade 9 math workbooks that have been developed, printed, and delivered to learners in public schools, the target also was between 97 and 100%. The process is the output is the same as for the previous indicator. On Karigwije, the number of learners completing Karigwije. Karigwije for this is not yet at the stage where we can record the number of learners that have finished the program. The program is just beginning in the following manner. Training of volunteers have been done. Materials in terms of books have been updated. Printing has taken place. Registration forms have been printed. I think as we speak now, registration is going on. And the focus really this year is to utilize a number of unemployed youth to participate in the Kabuda program as a job creation platform.
Program 2 continues on general education and training. We have talked about incremental introduction of African languages, and at the moment we are rolling it out to 215 schools in 6 provinces. DE thus far has performed internal monitoring of 50 schools in those sampled provinces. Provision of resources, audio resources that is CDs and teacher guides that are aligned to DBE workbooks have been developed in all 9 African languages and distributed to the pilot schools that are participating in the introduction of African language program. Multi-grade education, DBE together with provincial education departments in partnership with the British Council implemented what we call the LEAP program in 3 provinces, that is Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga. This program is about strengthening the teaching of English as a first additional language in grades 1 to 4. Thus far, 285 teachers and 42 subject advisors have been trained on the use of MP3 live chat to enhance teaching and learning, especially in multi-grade classes. Remember, rural school or rural education is one of our 10 non-negotiables. Continuing program 2, further education and training. A strategy for teaching English across the curriculum, which aims to strengthen English as a subject and as a language of learning and teaching, has been developed. The strategy will see learners receiving tuition in a language other than their home language. Thus far, the DBE has hosted a dry run session on English across the curriculum from grades up to 12 in preparation for orientation session for provinces. This was conducted in May. On inclusive education, the publishing of the draft CS policy, that is to improve effective systematic early identification of barriers to learning and admission of children, has been done. Development of a training manual for teachers and deaf teacher assistants for the foundation phase and grade 9 has also been done. ETD or early childhood development, at the moment working in collaboration with ETD PCTA and other stakeholders, we are profiling occupational competencies, and this has been finalized for a new level 4 ECD qualification. In terms of grade R implementation, the thrust is to really upgrade qualifications of our practitioners from level 4 or level 5 to level 6, and that process has commenced. At the moment, provinces have been requested to provide data so that we can know what is happening, how many educators out there are at NCF level 6 or above. And only 4 provinces have responded. KZN and 865 practitioners have enrolled for BS foundation phase. 180 practitioners have enrolled for a diploma, in grade R teaching. Western Cape 60 and Northern Cape 110. These are practitioners that are enrolled at a level that is higher than NCF level 6. Program 2 on e-learning. We finalized the donation of 60 classmates for ASEAN schools with Intel Africa, facilitated the connectivity of 15 schools, including 10 schools from Mpumalanga and 5 schools from Limpopo. DBE Cloud Solution, DBE has evaluated the functional design specification for the solution. Okay, there's something missing in that line. DBE has sent a request for renewal of antivirus from Symantec, which is an antivirus software. Content development and distribution. All provinces were provided with 24 educational digital content. Connectivity. We have facilitated connectivity of 50 schools, and a list of 100 schools have been submitted to ICASA for connectivity, and another list of 500 submitted to the Department of Communication. Our student portal has created a new learning space for home-based education. Workbook delivery of grade R for 10, 3 and 4 commenced in April 2014 so that we are ready for the new financial year. Delivery of additional volume 1 and 2 for grade 1 to 6 has also taken place to take care of shortages. Printing of grade 1 to 9 workbooks, volume 1 for 2015 academic year also commenced at the beginning of June.
and a total of over 11 million workbooks have been delivered out of 25 million that has been targeted. Grade 1 and 2 home language braille workbooks, volume 1 in all 11 languages, have been printed and delivered to all 22 special schools. Only 4 provincial education departments, Eastern Cape, Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape, have reported on universal coverage, which is aiming at each learner having a textbook for every subject. And finally, on Karibidis, the details, there was a lot of detail in the table on what is happening with the Karibidis. Registration process has begun, and the 2014 training material administrative documents have been reviewed as well. Problem 3, which is mainly about teachers. Number of qualified teachers is 30 or below entering the system. This is a recruitment issue. The target for the whole year is 8,000. Thus far, our preliminary figures show 5,280. A report on the number of qualified teachers aged 30 who are exiting the system. By the end of the first quarter, we have seen 311 terminations. Number of single teacher bursaries awarded to students for initial teacher education. The target for the year is 13,500. Preliminary data shows 14,298. We have already and in terms of teaching posts, we've indicated that 5,280 qualified entrants were appointed between January and March. A larger proportion of appointments actually happened during that time of the year. But on the other hand, DBE experienced a total of 8,007 qualified educators who entered the system, of which 311 are under 30 or under 30. To ensure that no class is without a teacher, temporary teachers are appointed in vacancies until the posts are permanently filled. This is something that happens in the province. 30% of schools, that is 8,900 out of 24,000, had all their posts filled permanently. The vacancy rate was at 9%, and approximately 90% of posts in the system were filled temporarily. The DBE has initiated a teacher profiling project to clean up and reconcile data on the personal system. Monitoring of IQMS. During the first quarter, our external moderators have visited 4,193 schools, and of those schools, 438 were monitored for the first time. The rest were just follow-up visits. The quarterly target of 3,000 schools was exceeded because two moderators were able to monitor 2 schools per day. Monitoring of ICMS processes and procedures, a total of 2,013 schools were visited in this regard and support was provided on the implementation of ICMS. Provincial education departments have trained a total of 1,275 newly appointed and 2,900 existing educators at school level 1 to 4 in terms of ICMS implementation. And this training is mainly focused on the roles and responsibilities of teachers and also of senior management teams in schools in the process of monitoring and evaluation of teachers. Post-school evaluation is a process that we know goes out there every year to assemble the number of schools in every province where we check the performance of schools in 9 core criteria. We're using 9 core criteria. And thus far, post-school evaluation supervisors in provincial departments have conducted external evaluation in 137 schools. In most of these schools, the following basic policies have been found to be available: admission policy, finance, language policy, religious policy, and the code of conduct for learners. A process to introduce an online school self-evaluation instrument has been initiated, and it is still under discussion with the General Motors Foundation South Africa Foundation. It will probably improve the way we monitor at the moment. Program 3 continues on performance management development system. In the Northern Cape, 135 officials were trained on financial management strategy training and student education. In the Free State, workshops were conducted with 58 teachers. In Gauteng, 607 office-based educators were trained through the Matthew Greenwood School of Leadership. In Limpopo, the Human Resource Support Services executed this function. A total of 296 office based indicators, the beneficiaries of development programs in the Western Cape and the Northwest respectively. In terms of Sunzali Shaka, there were 3749 recipients for placement in schools. But according to Grassal data, it shows that 2337 graduates were placed in schools as at the end of May this year, and 1412 were still unpaid by the time we produced this report. The amount of money that has been allocated is reflected there, 947 million. Preliminary data from the consolidated 2014 awards list have allocated 14,298 to students for initial teacher education during the first quarter. Meetings have been held with final year Sunzali Shaka bursary holders in the different universities where these people are located. Pension processes in terms of program 3 again, the DBE has received several complaints pertaining to delays in pension payouts. It then instituted an investigation in that regard so that the situation can be corrected. One of the key areas in our non-negotiables is strengthening the capacity of district offices. At the moment, DBE has identified New Leader Foundation as a partner with whom there will be collaboration in terms of tracking this policy implementation. The department is also working with Vodacom in expanding the strengthening processes of teacher centers. These are some of our partnerships that assist the department to carry forward the business of education. The department has also just established a National Institute for Curriculum and Professional Development to tackle the issue of self-diagnostic assessment for teachers, which is one of the key things that we want to look at in the five-year term, specifically in numeracy and literacy area. Program 4, the first indicator and the second indicator will only be achieved in the third quarter because it's AMA and NSC. I think the target, this is a multi-year target of 150. The narrative explains in detail because it is very difficult to try and fragment the output per quarter because these are projects that extend beyond a 3-month period. Then the next four indicators are all coming from General Household Survey. Grade 1, we have done grade R. 7-year-olds to 15-year-olds, who are in our institution. Next page. 9-year-olds who are in grade 4 and 12-year-olds in grade 7. We will only be able to report when GHS data is available to the department. But they are the target for us to meet. The number of officials from districts that achieve less than 55% who are undergoing some mentorship program. Thus far, we have been able to appoint 4 retired district directors as mentors who will serve in the districts that are affected. Reported cases on DBE on education delivery, this is about our call center as it receives calls from concerned citizens, parents, whoever, sometimes receiving them from the presidential hotline and being diverted to education. Our referral rate target was 100%, we got a 100% we have been able to achieve. But these were referred to provincial education departments and they were resolved. The resolution rate target was 90%, our output is 99.9%. Basically, in terms of program 4, this slide shows us the progress that has been made in preparation for the national certificate examination. I don't think the details really have to be elaborated upon, but we can do that.
So can I just briefly ask somebody? I just think it would be unfair, you know, for a word by word reading of 23 pages, and I don't know how many slides, because like RQMA's been the best fun. We just had that the last 2 or 3 weeks, so if we could skip that information, maybe go through the things that we did not have in front of us.
Though we had those recommendations, we haven't had them as per the quarterly report as to say how far they've gone. As per the quarterly report. Yes, I might agree to you as to say if the process can be speeded up.
Yeah,
yes, we
have this consumer and, you know, copies delivered as well. So it's pleasing.
But then I was given the time, they're given the time because I'm now in program 4, whereas we're just finishing program 5. For the benefit of those who want to hear clearly, really, I would love to continue the way you're doing, but try to live with faster. Because there are those where we want to go and understand fully. Yeah.
Thank you for those comments. Yeah, I was summarizing this slide. You see, the whole of this slide actually talks about preparation for the National Senior Certificate examinations, what has been done in terms of preparation of question papers, exam papers that have been distributed to schools to support learners in preparing for the examinations, and the moderation processes as well. The details, obviously, the real outcome will be in class 3. The next slide is related to the previous one. It's just about preparation. In some instances, it gives highlights of the rewritten or remarking process that took place for the 2018 NSC examination. And that far, when we started reporting, the process was on, but it has not been completed. It will be repeated in the second quarter. Under preparation as well on slide 30 is ongoing in all provinces, and DBE is monitoring all these processes to make sure that all provinces that print for themselves are ready, because the rest of all will receive materials that are printed by DBE. I think we did have a thorough, detailed presentation on infrastructure. So that slide just summarizes some of the achievements that we have done thus far. Remember, this is a project that has been targeted to end in 2016, and by the end of June, that is the cumulative output of what has been done. 59 schools are under construction, 22 schools have been provided with sanitation, 33 schools still under construction, 258 provided with water, 685 under construction, 256 provided with electricity, and 212 at various stages of implementation. In terms of monitoring and oversight, I think this one is about our IT, SASMs, and LURIS. I think it shows that over 8 million learners have been uploaded on the system, and a new additional 277,000 learners have come into the system as a result. And provincial monitoring is done through the following: the call center and the presidential hotline. The call center has received 2256 calls. The presidential hotline has received 1035. And the response rate, as you can see, only one case is still open. Program 5, this is a program that contains a lot of our social cohesion issues. Where we find a lot of partnerships related to some of the programs that we are designing to support the learning and teaching aspect. Now, the two indicators that are here, one is on the nutrition program. This report excludes Mpumalanga and Gauteng because of unsigned reports that we received, but they have submitted electronically. 19,800 schools have reported to have fed learners. And number of participants in activities for citizenship, rights and responsibilities and constitutional values, at the moment there is no report. There hasn't been a report on those activities for the quarter. There was no target. This is an annual target. And basically, to just summarize what Program 5 is about: strengthen emphasis on HIV and AIDS life skills education program, and then sexual and productive health programs for learners, 1,207 educator trained. Drug testing is one of the programs that is ongoing with the support of UNICEF. The integrated school health program is supporting learners in terms of oral health, vision, hearing, and speech and impairment. The deworming program is one of our newest programs under Program 5, supporting the nutrition program that is ongoing at school. Sexual reproductive health also is one of our key programs in this area, and we are implementing a comprehensive program in that regard. I've talked of NSNT before. So far, those are just the monitoring that we are doing at DBE to see if provinces are doing the right thing.
The next thing is psychosocial support. DBE has conducted monitoring in 4 provinces, those that are listed there. No, 2 provinces actually. And then what is happening in the Northwest, it is based on the number of the issues that are reported. In the Northern Cape, there's also a number of activities that is going on in terms of psychosocial activities on a number of conditions that learners may be having, especially if they affect learning. In terms of social cohesion, the following key 3 programs are being done. The oral history was still being prepared for when we reported. The National School Mood Court Competition and the Gender Equity and Gender Empowerment programs are ongoing. One of the key areas is school safety, and so far 15,540 schools are linked to police stations to try and implement that program. Sports and enrichment, we've got the SPEN DEE and Driven Club, and also the SASPE is at the head of preparation for the national competition. And finally, the partnerships that you also find in this program have got to do with AFBOC. I think AFBOC is dealing with the nutrition program, if I'm not mistaken. And then Vodacom Foundation, we saw Vodacom Foundation, I think, under ICT, Tata Brand Foundation, and SA Post Office. These are not the only partnerships that we have in the sector. And Dr. Rizzo can elaborate if members need support in that. Thank you very much for the comments. I'll hand over to the CFO.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. With regard to the extending of the department, I'll start with the allocation for the department. For the 2014-15 financial year, the department has been allocated 19.680 billion rand. And the majority of the budget is conditional grants, transfers to public entities, and other transfers. And in the conditional grants, we have the education infrastructure grant, the National School Nutrition Program, which are the biggest of the conditional grants. And then transfer to public entities, the main one there is the transfer for the Kunzalushaka Bazaar, which is transferred to the NSFAS. And then we have other transfers which include transfers like to UNESCO. And then the remainder of the budget, which is 5.412 billion, is for compensation of employees, examiners and moderators, EMS funds, office accommodation, specifically and exclusively appropriated, which is the allocation for the ACID program, and then the operational budget as well as project. And then for the third quarter, the spending is indicated in the slide, with the majority 5.633 billion, which is transferred. And then the remainder of the budget, which is 377.732 million, is for the items listed there. Basically, the expenditure for the first quarter for the department is 30.5%. Now the allocation of the budget is broken down into the 5 projects as indicated on the slide. And then the main allocation in Program 1 is for office accommodation. And then for Program 2, which is 1.954 billion for curriculum, the main allocations there are for workbook allocation as well as the curriculum literacy program. We also have 2 conditional grants in that program, which is a disability grant and a technical schools conditional grant. For the third program, which is the teachers branch, we have 1.268 billion. The main allocation there of 947 million is for the Kunzalushaka Bazaar. And then for the fourth program, planning and information and assessment, the main allocations there are for the education infrastructure grant transferred to provinces, as well as for the ACD schools backlog grant. And then for the last program, educational enrichment, the main allocations are for the National School Nutrition Program, as well as the HIV and AIDS Livestream Conditional Grant. Now, according to spending, Program 2, which is curriculum, shows a low spending of 7.9%, and the reason for that is because of the programs that take place last program, which is Karigude and Workbooks. As it was mentioned earlier, Karigude is only starting now, and the Workbooks printing has already started, but we have not received invoices for payment, and delivery is continuing on that program. And then the teachers' branch showed a high spending of 80.4%. But this one is due to the one-off transfer to the Pundalushaka, for the Pundalushaka rather than to the NSFAS. The other three are within acceptable level of spending. And then this one just shows in terms of economic classification, which is compensation of employees, their spending is within acceptable level of 23.3%. Goods and services includes some of the programs that I just indicated, like printing of workbooks and payments for the Karigude program and so on, hence showing a low spending of 6%. And the transfers and subsidies have been transferred according to the schedule. And then the payment for capital assets, which is mainly for a CD program. The bulk of the allocation is in respect of payment of ASID, and the submission of invoices is very slow. So what we are doing in order to improve expenditure here, staff members, some of the staff members, when they go for update, regular update meetings, they also bring invoices with them. I mean, we had officials that were engaged at N yesterday, somewhere in the Eastern Cape. So hopefully in the next report, we would have the spending would have increased on the item. In fact, the unit also presented the invoices that they had already received, but we had not processed them at the time of this report, but they were processed afterwards. And this slide also just shows more details of compensation of employees, examiners, and so forth. The one item, maybe the two items that we can reflect on, is the school infrastructure development grant and EMR fund. But infrastructure development grant, I had just explained that. And then for the EMR fund, the low spending there is because of spending on items like workbooks and Karigude as indicated, but also on the annual national assessment. And as you are aware, that will be taking place this month, and not much expenditure has taken place at the time of the report. But printing of question papers has taken place, and the rest of the expenditure will be reflected, hopefully, in the third quarter. And then these are the details of the items I've just talked about here, Mark Fund. Those are the allocations for Karigude, workbooks, ITMS, NEDU, school nutrition, and national assessment. Now, the school nutrition that is reflected in this area is the operational portion that is with the department. It's not transferred to the provinces. But the ones that are showing low expenditure is Karigude, both the Karigude project and the EPWP Karigude. Workbooks, as I indicated, printing has already taken place, delivery in process for workbook one. And then national assessments as well is the one that is very low. And that one also printing has taken place. And then the ANA is about to be written. And then the conditional grant. The one that looks a bit low is the HIV and AIDS, but actually it's how the transfers are structured. It's not necessarily that they are not spending. This is how the transfer is structured. The first transfer in the first quarter is a bit low, and then it increases over the financial year. And these are just the explanations of the low spending on the various areas. And then this was the transfer. Pundalushaka is showing 100% as I indicated. With that one, we transfer one off at the beginning of the financial year, and the others are humanity, we have transferred 25% of the available funds. And then other transfers, most of these transfers like UNESCO, IDEA, guidance counseling, we receive invoices at the end of the third quarter or the beginning of the fourth quarter. So the transfers are only made at that time once we receive the invoices from the various organizations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, can I open up for discussion and questions? If need be. Can I just limit you, members, to four questions per person, please?
so that you can manage time and you can manage things. Can you see the indication of time for those who are interested to say something to us? Honorable Nguni, Honorable Vaz, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Nguni, Honorable Nkosto, Honorable Passon, Honorable Bonjani, lastly. Honorable Nguni, you have a first.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And morning, Mr. Chairman and Honorable Members. I would like first to commend and appreciate the way we have put TFO. There are explanation rules of each and every program, why each program has not been done off. If it's done, why it's done. I think I appreciate that if they can be kept up so that we don't have to find why the rules are like that. Number two is the issue of the issue of pension. I have seen there saying the reasons are being documentation missing, and number two, sometimes they are not complete. This was a big difference. I believe that there is, in each district, there is a personnel that is responsible for that. And if that is the case, what is the department doing? Because the issue of communication comes in there. Do you communicate with those people in the time, the person responsible? And the last one is the question of the second budget. Here we have the indication that second have to support schools. But that is budget controlled by the second or controlled by the district. I understand that SECET fail to perform their duties because sometimes the district do not release the money. They don't have papers to print the documentation and the like. It is not possible that the SECET can control their own budget. SECET managers can control their own budget at their offices. Thank you very much.
Honorable, have you received
the pension?
Is it okay?
No, I have not.
Don't be quiet.
Honourable President,
much nicer to interact with people who don't have a pension, otherwise now we know you'll pay for lunch a couple of times. I mean there's a lot of questions, and that's why I wanted that not to be very far with it, but rather interact. I'll start off by one very important thing to me, and this is the whole budget and depends on the LCD program. Because I remember 2011-12, where he said we're going to change part of both funds in school, blah, 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 and we've now shifted the final date from 14-15 to 15-16, and I recently asked a question of the 150 schools. I don't think one of them were built for 2014-15, because the answer I got was that 75 schools were built since inception. Now, I take quite a bit of a sense if I get a response like that. But on this very program, it says 59 schools are at different phases of construction. If you read the web page of the department, it's on several levels of implementation or on several phases of construction. There's nothing clear. I think the department must promise to this committee and tell us exactly the 150 schools planned for this financial year 2014-15, how many is built? How many is in the process? How many did not start? It's a few months for the 150 schools to be built. My other concern is, Chairperson, I want to ask about, this grant that we hand over, or money that we hand over to provinces. And even if we say it is conditional grants, we often find that it's not spent on that specifically. I mean, if you look at the school nutrition fund, Limpopo, you look at the things and how they go and to whom they go and how much of the food reaches the poor children who are hungry. It's shocking. I'm also very interested, my colleague is a specialist on special needs schools. So I'm quite concerned if anybody in this department, or must I rather refer it to the province, what is our role from this department on special needs schools in the provinces? And I give the example of Peter Colvani School in Limpopo that we're supposed to move to the Witi, HWITE, Witi School in Mount Gwyn. Did that school close in Tekotolwane, in Polokwane, and go to Mount Gwyn or not? Because they were literally children who were deaf and blind, never had equipment, past schooling age, but for various social economic circumstances couldn't leave the school, and then were supposed to go to that. How do we, what is the relationship between our department and those very needy special school children in the provinces and the allocation of the budget to that? Thank you.
And then the first to answer that question, Michelle, which falls in the presentation, where we get a presentation on conditions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morning to everybody. My first question is the process of Teach Mandarin. We want to implement 11 home languages. Now we concentrate on Mandarin. Why are we wasting resources on Mandarin if we are wanting to concentrate on home languages? That's the first question. The second one is managing litigation in 23 ongoing cases against the department. How many of these cases were tabled, and why are they continually ongoing? Why can we not solve them? I've got many questions, but let's just limit it to those that I think are more important. Okay. You say that with regard to the report on the number of practitioners that will be supported, only four provinces have responded. What is the department going to do with those provinces that have not responded? We know what the problem is with regard to ECD practitioners. And then page 9, the printing of grade 1 to 9 workbooks. When is the balance of these workbooks expected? I think I've done a 4. Okay, can I just ask one? On page 11, in most of these schools, you have 5 basic policies. We have a huge problem with regard to safety and security. Why is there no policy in schools with regard to safety and security? The others are the rest in another fashion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Colin. Honourable Colin.
My name is
I think some of the questions have been raised.
But on the issue of litigation, I wanted to check how much is your expenditure per, how much have you spent so far on your litigation, and then whether the department does consider alternative dispute resolution in order to avoid high cost of litigation. The other point would relate to the MPEG that is mentioned on program one. You have stated that you state you have an improvement plan that intends to deal with the areas of weaknesses. I wanted to check what are the key issues that you are attending to with regard to that improvement plan, and whether you are following it, because it's one thing to have a plan and not follow it. Maybe Chairperson, if possible, to see the plan. The other point would relate to the issue of the transfer to the municipalities in particular. What is it that you are finding there at that level as a department? Is it at the second level or directly to the municipalities? And then how do you ensure that the municipalities properly account for the funds that they are allocated? And do they have the capacity to implement what you are funding? Because I know that municipalities will get money for something that they are not even expense of, the one thing that I also wanted to check is the issue of the department in terms of the quarter report. You don't tell us whether you are going to overspend or underspend in future, because like we see that the some of the programs are behind, although there are valid reasons that you have presented to us, and then also we don't see that maybe there is a, you don't indicate to us whether there are certain items that you have under budgeted for. Are you going to need for us to increase the budget or to cut so that you avoid the unnecessary violence of funds as the year progresses? Chairperson, I think I have got one last question. Why did you, the last one would relate to the way you use your media. I'm impressed. But I think you have to intensify, because there's a lot that is good that is coming from the department which is not communicated, hence the department is getting that publicity. So I think we must intensify that to generate positive communication coming from the department and not wait for the department to be number eight by the detractors, you know. Related to that, Chairperson, would be the issue of how are you dealing with the issue of the connectivity? You getting a flat rate connectivity at schools from the networks that are getting the support of government, like Vodacom, MTN, you know, the issues of social responsibility on their part. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, for that's two issues on the program. You are talking that they had about 10,000 students for the IT system in the system, and I paid 5,000 for the education to answer. It's been quite difficult for about 2,000. 727 you can find out the number of and you're saying you know that most of us who is about to just want to understand why not employ the people who have 2,000 who are hit or the resources of that. That's what you understand.
Wow.
That's one. And the second issue is that you have you know, you're reading the tone to partner to talk to yourself on the back of the head. You read that you monitor two schools a day, and that's why we have modules this test that you monitor the implementation of the high school. Then I just wonder, people want to know the modules of our army, how do you do it? So what I tell you why. You guys have your daughter left the questions that honorable members. Well, tell me story how this discipline is finished. Are you not contributing to the system of the school committee? You are able to monitor who schools that they want to win our case to conduct instead of us for the same time. What method are you the story comes like this, you go there, you get ovation, what? The unthinker, you know? You just ask for something, just tell us more. To bring in confidence in the system, what do you think? So maybe, question mark.
Thank you, Chairperson. On program one, I see that parents are not expected to pay school fees, but there are some schools which still ask money from children. I just want to check from the department what measures are being used in order to make sure that this is not happening. Also, I'd like to know, you normally get SMSs from students who like to benefit from the Funda Vishakapa service. Where do they apply or what do they have to do? Where do they go? Thirdly, I don't know if the department is aware of the fact that some of these graduates, when they are placed at school, you find that their parents are not ready to teach. Yes, they have passed, but then the training method, in the olden days I know, you would have to teach in front of your lecturer and in front of educators and in front of your learners, and you are criticized terribly. And this is an ongoing thing, maybe for a period of 3 years before you can actually go and teach. So, are there any extra trainings that these graduates get before they go and be placed to school? I think that's all I've got. And thank you for your presentation. And thank you for the most competition. I can say my grandson is one of the participants in one of his schools in this MOOC competition. I get questions every day about constitution and everything. Thank you very much.
And you see, survive the answers. Okay, thank you very much. Can I just have a broad question to you, CFO, and to everyone, DG? We are here today. Are we saying SDE? We are on track with the spending. The budget is sufficient. Are you fine? What are the challenges? We are approaching the So that's the fundamental question you must be having, and you know very well as the committee, as to say, from your own understanding, whatever we are doing now is in check with your APP. As said, what we have budgeted for, you are just fine.
If we can just be assured of that one, I think we can all come out here from this committee meeting today being satisfied. Yes, there might be challenges here and there. There might be areas where we still need to catch up. But financially, I would say all is well with you for this financially. Secondly, on Friday, we'll be having this joint committee where we're dealing with the issue of ICT with telecommunications. We have mentioned it here, and I was very happy because we've just, there is a communication from the that has been sent to DBE, where we'd love to hear which schools have been connected by whom, which areas, and we have learned that about 400 schools have been given to 500 to 200. If we can just get to that understanding for the committee members when going there, even on Friday, we know exactly what are the expectations from RTE, because we'll be having all these stakeholders, the Vodacom, ICASA, and they will be coming to present in front of both the committees as to say what is it that they are doing when it comes to the question of connecting the school. So it should be very important that we get the information from your side to know exactly what's happening. On the issue of nutrition, we know exactly there are challenges in rural provinces. I didn't pick them up here on the presentation and also on the notes that she has given us. Let me make an example of the Eastern Cape district area, where we've got the information that the nutrition is not taking place in that area. But we don't see the indication that just to the issues of budget and whatever. Are you aware of such things? Go to provinces like AZN, where there's been a lot of halabaloo when it comes to the issues of entering towards nutrition, and there have been disturbances there. So what impact does it have on your mind? Or are you aware of such things? What is it that you are doing as a department to come and intervene in such issues? Because really, I don't think it can be just left like this. I think the issue of teacher supply and demand has been touched, but I think it's one of the areas of concern as to what we have got, if ever I understood it well, to say I think a lot of teachers are hesitant the first thing, more than what we are getting in. Because I believe the numbers shows that in the near future we're going to be in crisis if ever this is happening, but maybe we can't even hear the plans that we have. For me, it should always, we know provinces like Eastern Cape, where there are errors, where there are no teachers, mostly math and science, but if ever we see this relationship between those who are everything and those who are getting in, the question would be, are we in any position to make sure that we fill up those deficits that we have, if not, what are the plans that are where we can try and address those issues. For now, can we just hand over to you?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will start and I'll try to cover most of the items for the colleagues to come in if I'll indicate where they will come in. And afterwards, I'll do that. But let me start with Honorable Chair's question about the budget and spending. I think the number of members of the committee will be aware that with the appointments of the political officers to the new administration, we received a mandate in terms of dealing with certain non-negotiables, some of which are basically not covered in the APP or in the strategic plan or in the budget. So some of our programs are being redirected in that manner. Sometimes it's already incurring expenses and some will do so in the future. Like, I mean, like an example, it may be ICT and so forth going forward. So I don't want to say that, I'm saying it's fine in the sense that we are taking into context what we've been told by the National Treasury that there is no additional funding. And that needs to be taken into account in the context of what is bigger picture for the entire country and the economy at all. So while the sector, not just the DBE, has requirements that have to be funded, we've also looked at the DBE within our own budget to reprioritize. So some of those non-negotiables, in order to get it moving, or if it has been in motion, to continue the momentum, we've looked at adding to that. So what we've indicated is, with the money we have, we must make sure we spend. And certain activities which are not actually the core business of the department, are not part of the non-negotiables, we need to relook at whether we need to stop us. There are some programs that are going ahead, but maybe not part of our business. So that's ongoing exercise. It's quite interesting that yesterday as well, we were with the minister discussing some of it. And the ICT, I think, that's our intent for Friday, that there will be a report on progress in terms of delivery. But I think the key going forward, which may be indicated in the meeting, is that this is what we believe to be the deal breaker in this administration that the minister and the deputy minister has identified on two levels. One, ICT is used in particular in terms of promoting the curriculum. You could look at increasing the class size, while savings in that regard would mean can be put into the use of ICT. And on the other hand, the curriculum itself would be rolled out in terms of where you have digitalized your LTSM as well, which could provide some relief in terms of cost in that regard as well. So there's some benefits in, and it could bring us to maybe 10, 15 years in a short space of time over the 5 years. But I think we need that, and this is basically one of the things that's going into the big pass in the next 2 months. So we should have more to say shortly in that regard. I think Dr. Whittle will talk about the decision coming if he has not covered it adequately. I'll go to Honorable Nguni and documents regarding pension. Basically, the employer of the teachers are the provinces. So when they're employed and when they retire, the documents go there. Sometimes maybe the document is not complete and maybe the fault of the teacher, but what we're finding as well is that administratively people are not doing their work. And that even if the teacher had left out an ID, copy of ID, they could have come back. Because yesterday's discussion was that if you know that someone's going to go on retirement at 65, you do not need to wait for the application. The file should be prepared and so forth. And that one of the things that we need to look at is to strengthen the HR capacity in provinces as well as the monitoring of that. And pensions is an area that we target. So I think even now I'm dealing with I'll mention the member's name, but when it got to our attention at the national, we then basically get people to look at addressing that, but those are on an individual basis. But at the end of the day, what you want is efficiency, that when a person knows that they've served the career and that they were entitled to their returns in terms of the pension, they should get that payment as is due to them, and they do not have to wait. In terms of structured budgets, some provinces do allocate funding to circuits and districts and so forth, but we've had a discussion at the HEDCOM. At the end of the day, the accounting office in the province, the HOD, is basically responsible for the budget. At times, this is basically dealing with delegations as well. If there are delegations, then the budget could be allocated. So it's a balance between managing the overall budget and at times giving the delegation. And it's something that we're working on, which that is why we've the minister created a branch to deal with districts. And this matter has been raised in the discussion in the district director forum as well about not just the budget, about other delegations regarding appointments, not necessarily terminations, but also taking disciplinary action and so forth. So I think I think we are here next week on the district. We'll probably give more details on that regard. So the Honorable and about with regard to the CD. Basically, this is the progress in the first quarter. I'm aware of the question of the 150. We did make a presentation last week to the SCOA, which the Honorable Lovemore attended, I think, as a member from the, from the portfolio committee. I think in time, Honorable Chair, we may be required to come and make a detailed presentation as we did in the last administration on the CD. And there's 150 schools. I think the time doesn't allow to explain that if you have 150 schools in APP, that it would be built in one financial year. We've had that before, and the program itself would indicate, but we have more than 200 schools out in construction. 75 have been completed up to date, and basically on Thursday, the president opens Kensington in Cape Town as well. So I think we could give that in detail. In fact, we'll send a written report as well that we've, the same that we've shared with the Standing Committee on Appropriation regarding the city schools. And maybe that'll give clarity about the 150 schools as well as the schools that go beyond and what's the extension. With regard to the expenditure, in the first year we were given approximately, we were given 700 million, we spent about 56 when we started up. The following year, we were at about 25%, and now we are at about 70%+. So spending has improved as, in the beginning we didn't have capacity, we put in a program support unit within the department, and with that there's also other issues that we need to deal with, but now we've been creating a branch to deal with infrastructure with some latitude compared to other branches we refer to in the administration in order to improve infrastructure delivery. I think on the teaching of Mandarin, I think Mr. Mwili will cover that, although I can, Mr. Swan will deal with the litigation quickly. The practitioners will plan to see the same. Yeah, let me just go quickly to this on the exams and the furniture. I think in our presentation last week, the week before maybe, we said we indicated at grade 12 level, we generally don't receive problems with furniture, the school may reorganize the program and so forth. But I think we're in a better position that if there are requests for furniture, we do know where to go in terms of the stocks that we have already procured for the to try to ensure that every child has a desk and a chair. I think Eastern Cape in the main, we are actually assisting at the moment in the normal delivery of furniture, but I think in terms of furniture, since the last meeting, we've already checked and we have not had any requests. If there was any, I think even at provincial level, the provincial department are able to assist in addressing those. I think on the Kunza Lushaka and the non-placements, we indicated that there's a plan, and the plan in order to eliminate the 100% placement of graduates net from the preceding year, we would actually issue letters, provisional letters in October, because it's a directive that we should reach 100% in the next year. So that is to be seen in October, whether the number of about 3,000 plus that are expected to graduate do get those letters, depending on their success rate, they would then be able to take up their placement. If there's 10% that do not, then we need to look at how we employ other educators. There are issues regarding underspending, but how can Karen Gude be helped to spend? Karen Gude, the program hasn't started, hasn't really rolled out, but the spending will happen. In fact, silently and privately, we will not halt the program itself, but I'm hoping that the way they spend is an efficient manner, and that some of that savings will be then. In fact, we've already requested a reprioritization on some parts, because we believe that can be used in other sectors, but without putting Kari Gude in jeopardy. We'll find that Kari Gude may not spend its allocated amount, not because it was underspending, because we ensured there's efficiency measures. And one of the things that come out is that the AG didn't indicate certain recommendations on how to address the functioning of the program. If implemented, I think definitely there would be efficiencies, and that wouldn't be underspending, but it actually allow us to reprioritize for some of the other unfunded activities in the department, but they're subject to Treasury approval as well. Are we going to overspend or underspend? We always try to maintain that we spend within the budget and with and that it should be plus the underspending portion, but at certain times and even, it's quite certain requests are very threatening to an accounting officer. So at certain times we need to look at, in terms of delivering, we may have to consider that, but I don't think we're in the category of overspending. If we are overspending, that means there's going to be signs of in the report itself as well as what outputs that are there in terms of delivery, which show that we are actually requiring this kind of spending, and that would then be what we will take up with the National Treasury as well as Minister of Finance. I think on the question of the 8,000 who are leaving and 5,000 that enter, I think in the presentation for the annual, we have about 13,000 that usually exit the system over the year. This is over one quarter. It's an assumption making without any thing that we have this issue around the pensions. The National Treasury is making changes, therefore teachers believe their pensions are at risk, and this would be one of the reasons that 8,000 is already up. Because if you're looking at it, if it's going to go over a whole quarter, you're talking about 32,000 educators, but I don't think that's going to be the normal trend. And they're probably the first quarter, I'm talking about the first quarter of the school term and the last quarter of the school term, are probably periods when you have teachers coming in and teachers leave. But that could be one of the areas, but clearly the issue of supply and demand is something that we're addressing. And some of these have where people have resigned and actually come back as well. So we can give, we need to give more details in that, and we can look at that in the future. I think on the IQMS and the two schools per day, I think in a detailed report, some of these schools are basically a repeat visit. There's a smaller number of first-time schools that are in visited. So I'm just indicating that maybe the return visit was to look at those areas that they followed up. The other is that the size of the school could indicate what they were looking at, and it's not this is restricted to the IQMS as well as the proximity. In some instances, it's impossible to visit more than one school, even if you finish because of the distances that the IQMS monitoring travels. I think Chair, I'll give my colleagues studying with Mr. Nguyen.
It is maybe before we have given keys and talking about the issue of funding of the United Schools. Is there any review measure doing the what is happening? Are we getting the value for money that you are putting there when it comes to those schools? What is it that you are saying on that issue? And also the technical education, technical high school, do we have teachers even to teach those subjects today? Are we getting room for money even when it comes to that? And also, maybe even for later stages, they discuss the spread of education in Hawaii, so we can even ask us to know what is happening on that sense.
Let me just, before I answer, I'll leave with the minute to tell you to inform the people about the goodness. On the schools that are paying, are not supposed to pay fees and are paying fees, we brought to our attention, we investigate, we inform provinces. If necessary, we do our own investigation and intervene to put a stop to their practice, because that's against the regulations that are there. However, the regulations do allow schools to request what is referred to as a voluntary contribution. And we issued, just before the end of last year, we issued a guideline in that regard, in that there are certain activities that parents need to contribute to. So the minister is of the belief it cannot be totally where the school has to take on that responsibility of the state. In fact, our no-fee schools, we do not, if you were going to undertake a study tour or an excursion, there would need to be an external source that will have to pay for that. So that's the kind of activity we're using. That there could be a contribution by the parents. There could be something identified in the school that they, as a governing body, they would like parents to contribute to. But however, there are certain instances where parents, the economic situation doesn't dictate that they are able to contribute. Therefore, our guidelines indicate that they cannot be compelled to or be victimized for that. And where we find that that has come up, we do then investigate and indicate what actions should be done or what should be stopped. On the Funds of the Shark, I think we can provide details of where they can apply to, as well as we can, they can look at our website as well if they can access it. So the details should be on the website, but otherwise at the department, if someone writes to us, we do write back to indicate the details. On the additional training for the Funds of the Shark graduates, basically, what's been found, I think, in the research of the graduates we've got, that they are generally better prepared than, I don't want to compare it to any previous, in their content, they are better prepared teachers. However, as new entrants, they do need support. So the program going forward now is that we're looking at introducing an orientation where the teachers are given a form of training to prepare themselves for the entry to the profession. and as well as when they are in the system, that we are continuing contact with them over the 4 years as well. Thank you, DG, Chair and Honourable Members. Chair, let me start with the issue that you raised of the Dinaledi and Technical Life Coach Conditional Grant. We received a directive from the CM, the quarter, that the two customers reconfigured. Given the fact that as a system and taxpayer, we were not really getting value for money. And we engaged with provincial treasury. Last week, we received a response from provincial treasury allowing us to reconfigure the two grants. The strategy that we are putting together is that we will use the 200 out of 1,006 technical high schools, which benefited from the technical high schools conditional grant, and I'm saying 200 out of 1,006 technical high schools nationally that we have. And we will use the 500 schools that have been part of the Galilee conditional grant to reach out to the rest of the other schools. In other words, they'll become resource schools, so they've got computers, they've got extra teachers, they've got equipment. Now we are going to use them as hubs to reach out to the rest of the schools. There are schools in the country that have not been offering mathematics. And CM issued a directive that we must get an audit of that. We've got the audit, and we're going to ensure that all schools at least offer some form of mathematics in this country. And I'm sure you are aware that we're also preparing the system for implementing HEPS for technical high schools. We are also going to use these two grants to prepare the system and to implement HEPS for technical high schools. And the issue that we are addressing there is increasing the number of learners who offer technical subjects, so that you prepare the NDP say by 2030, we should be able to produce at least 30,000 artisans per annum. And you can only do that if you've got a solid base from your schooling system to feed your FEC colleges so that you've got the artisans that are required. So we are preparing ourselves for that already. Yeah. And then we'll be using these two grants to do all of this. And here I can also say that we are also addressing the issue of the mathematics vis-a-vis the literacy scheme. We'll be happy to learn that the ministerial task team found nothing wrong with mathematical literacy. In other words, we've been vindicated that the best thing that ever happened in this country was the introduction of mathematical literacy. The best thing that ever happened. Because you know that the education that many of you went through, you either did mathematics or nothing. At the best, you do functional mathematics up to an 8. And beyond that, there's no form of mathematics that you are doing. But at least currently, learners take mathematics in one form or the other up to grade 5. So these grants will be used, and our intention is to reduce the number of learners who take mathematical literacy in favor of mathematics and technical mathematics. The reason why an exodus of learners went to mathematical literacy is because you only have two forms. If you don't cook with this one, you go this way. So we now put in another option that will help ease the burden of mathematical literacy and encourage more and more learners to mathematics. And the research that we have conducted shows that some of the learners who have been doing mathematical literacy can easily do mathematics. The marks that they are getting can afford them to at least get a pass in mathematics. And honorable members, the DG will tell you when many people are working with this question paper. In fact, the one chairperson of Malus was of the view that learners must be allowed, even those who do mathematics, must be allowed to do mathematical literacy. Some people think that mathematical literacy is easy. Not all aspects of mathematical literacy are easy. Some are even more difficult than abstract mathematics. Okay, DG, maybe I'll leave it at that and move to the next. And then it is, yeah, it's extremely difficult, much more difficult than the functional memory. You've also said indeed BD has confirmed that we put together a presentation and the focus of Friday's meeting is around connectivity issues. We'll bring you up to speed on the progress that we have made. We'll also bring you up to speed as to which are the service providers that have started meeting their license obligation, as the BD indicated. And so far, there's only one that's really trying, which is Vodacom. I can tell you now. Vodacom is the only one. Telkom, of course, they are delivering the 1,650 schools through the legacy project of FIFA, money which was left after 2010 as a legacy project. That's the only thing that they are doing. So in terms of license obligations, many of these people are not coming to the party. And that's the big fact that the DG is talking about. Getting into something similar to your ocean lab, which the presidency and the relevant department went in. The DG caught it, getting into a room, locking ourselves in, and not allowing anyone to go out until we have firm agreements and deliverables before we get out of the room. That's the kind of thing that we are looking forward to. And I hope that Friday's meeting will help us a lot in making those improvements. We'll be having a workshop soon, which involves the World Bank. It has indicated interest in facilitating this workshop or getting us into a big fast. That's why DG calls it a deal breaker. If we don't crack this one, then we believe that if we can crack e-education, it will help us a lot to improve learning outcomes. The Free State is an example of it, where e-education has proven to be working quite well. And then, Honorable Mashege, did you cover the issue of the graduates, how they are trained and so on? In fact, he's right. In terms of content knowledge, our current graduates are good. We all know that universities are quite good and strong in knowledge creation and so on, but not so strong in methodology. Yeah, pedagogy is the real pedagogy happens at the college level, where more attention is given there, and we're quite happy with the recent development of some colleges that are particularly for foundation things. But it remains an area of focus for us. And then the Honorable Mokoto, I've covered the issue that you raised around connectivity and pay rate, affordability and so on. The bottom line is that we have not arrived. We've not addressed that issue. Connectivity remains a very expensive commodity for the sector. And the method that the DG referred to, I hope will get partners to come in and commit, and even for schools, because they are government institutions, will consider charging you half. Instead of charging you like a profit maker, we're hoping that will get so that there's something. And then the DG addressed the issue of Karikule. Just to say that Karikule does not run like a normal school, even if you have not started at the time when they're supposed to. We have paid 240 hours. And those 240 hours can happen any time within the year. The balance of the, I think it came from Honorable Koso, the balance of the nine books, the nine mathematics books, well, in terms of book one, workbook one and workbook two, which are used now, we have delivered all of them. We have even done remediation for all of those books. We are now in the process of delivering 2015. I reported to see a triple M. And we're sitting at 35% delivery rate of workbook one for 2015, not 2014. These are books that are going to be used in 2015. So the balance has been addressed and become the remediation. And then Honorable Van der Waals made a Honorable Boshoff. Well, the admission to Mandarin will not be done at the neglect of other responsibilities like home languages. For instance, honorable members, I don't know how many of you know that many of our schools are offering French and German. Many of our schools are offering French and German. There's an optional subject for learners, and it makes them viable for employment. Now, China is all over Africa, and probably all over the world. And Africa has been identified as a new market to trade with. And therefore, the schooling system has to respond accordingly, to position our learners to make themselves available for opportunities that are going to come.
Hello?
And we're not going to make this obligatory throughout the entire system. Schools have an option to offer Mandarin, like German, like French, like in East African languages that some of our schools. Yes, like, although Latin is a dead language now, it used to be. Yeah. But I'm saying Mandarin is really to prepare the country to participate as part of BRICS. This year is the year of South Africa in China. We've been going there quite often. Next year, you see more and more Chinese coming to South Africa, trying to take to look at opportunity for trade. So our children must be prepared, you know, to get involved there, and even to facilitate trade, because South Africa is seen as the gateway to Africa, and even facilitate those opportunities into African countries. And that's why we are taking on Mandarin. It's a great PTSD. I will give you statistics to show you all over the world how many countries are offering Mandarin. The U.S. is leading. It's got Mandarin schools all over. And that's why even the children who represent them in the International Olympia are not indigenous, U.S. children. I mean, they're Chinese who migrated to U.S. and who found business opportunities. And I'm just saying this immense value.
You know what, honorable members, even other committees, if ever there's a need where we see that we need to be also empowered when it comes to that, I think it's one of the causes that we can organize as a committee where we need to be exposed.
Exactly. If you agree. If you agree, that is one of the causes that we can try and organize on. So that as we go out to those schools, try to interact with those learners who are doing it, we have to organize as well.
Thank you, honorable members. DG answered most of the finance questions. The only one that was left was the transfer to municipalities that was raised by honorable Mugoto. The transfers that we make, we don't pay to municipalities. We transfer to provincial education departments, and it's mainly for conditional grants. Now, within the department, we have units that monitor the spending of this money. If it's not spent, it's reverted to the revenue fund, which is reverted to government if it's not spent. Thank you, sir.
Before you tell us, they must spend for this occasion.
Thank you. Thanks, Honourable Chair. The two questions that I'm going to deal with is from Honourable Fonamore on the 23 ongoing cases. I think the word ongoing is maybe a bit strong. But I think the cases are, I can put them in three categories. The department currently is dealing with around about four cases that is directly against the minister and the department. Then the, no, you didn't ask the question. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry then. So I can put it in three categories. The department is busy with about four cases that is directly against the department. Then there are cases that is put under the section 100 against Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. And then there are cases where the DG and the minister is cited as certain COP respondents that is also against the provinces. So the four cases that we're dealing with is on track. One is in court at the moment, so we're waiting for judgment. The other one the Edu Solutions that claimed 100 million from the minister when the contract was suspended in Limpopo. We're waiting for court dates and those kinds of things. But why we have him on is that he feels that we've got a kind of interest, so we monitor him then as well. The second question was on how much was spent up to now. Well, up till the 21st of August, we spent about 310,000 rand. Mainly on legal opinions and consultations with counsel.
Thank you very much, DJ and Chairperson. The school nutrition is a massive program. I mean, it covers about 21,000 schools across the country. We feed on a daily basis every single school day. We are currently reviewing the performance of the program. As a department, we lean towards a decentralized model, which means that you don't issue a tender for big service providers. You pay the money over to schools. You ask schools to then procure through small, medium enterprises and cooperatives. We are currently working with the Eastern Gate on the sixth grade matter, and we'll provide a written response to the committee as soon as that report is available. We're also aware of, I know in Mpumalanga, for example, there are issues around the issuing of the tender that the court has, and it's a matter of public knowledge, that the court has indicated that there were certain irregularities with the award of those tenders. What we've asked the province to do, and which is what they're doing currently, to continue feeding with the old providers that they have, and then to sort out the issues around those tenders. But as I said, we are taking certain proposals to the Council of Education Minister shortly about how we continue to strengthen the performance of that program.
Is that the case with the Limpopo School Nutrition cases as well?
Chairperson, we can provide an update on the Limpopo one. Remember, Limpopo had specific problems about a year ago, and what we've asked them to do is to decentralize their model. So for the last part of last year, the beginning of this year, they've actually been paying money over to schools. And whether, you know, with the new administration, they could, because provinces essentially choose their models. I think there's four provinces at the moment that have the decentralized model. And five provinces that are decentralized. So the four provinces with a centralized is the Western Cape, Gauteng, KZN, Mpumalanga. And as I said, the Limpopo finds themselves almost in transit, you know, somewhere between the two, and we're not quite sure if they'll go the one way or the other way. But at the moment, we're providing support in terms of decentralizing their program. There is currently school safety policies available in the school. I will make them available to the policy.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Mukosa on MTEC. Firstly, the areas that were not on, that did not perform well in the 2016 MTEC exercise. Basically, maybe let me explain that we've got four levels of scoring. When you score a one, it means whatever is required is not existent, or maybe it's a policy is not approved, so you can't even move beyond level one. When you're at level two, you've got the bare minimum. You've met the bare minimum of that standard. And then level three, you've got everything that is required. Level four, you've done three and beyond. So all the criteria for level three plus anything extra will give you level four. Now the areas where we got level one and two were in the areas of internal in the area of access to information, BIA, or, you know, compliance to BIA, and patient certification, recruitment and retention strategies, diabetes management, employee health, PMDS of the head of department, management of disciplinary cases, payment of suppliers, and integration of monitoring and evaluation in performance and strategic management. Those were the key areas where we got either a 1 or a 2. The rest, out of 31 indicators, we had a 3 and a 4. now, in terms of the improvement plan that I talked about, the improvement plan is available. We can forward it to them. It was not a requirement from DCFE, but we felt after the exercise, we needed to stipulate to colleagues how they can improve before the exercise. Unfortunately, the result of the MTEC 2018 was delayed, I think, because of elections. I don't know. It came in July, and already in August, we were, DCFE started training departments again to prepare for MTEC 1.4. So the monitoring aspect has not happened, but this is maintained. Thank you. Can I say it? Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Often it comes to the member at the end of the table, and I don't know, I see her mispronouncing her name as she would have at the workshop. In response to the question around communication, obviously it's a very complex environment, and when you look at the provision of information which signals the good news story, quite often we are at the mercy of our leader houses to actually use the information that we provide. But we attempted as far as possible across the sector now to ensure that not only through provincial communicators but also to involve the stakeholders in the public entities in developing clear communication messages that go out there, and also to ensure that we also don't only get forced into a reactive stance but to be proactive as the committee has suggested about sharing what is in fact happening out there. This will in fact take the form of engaging, I think, on the social media platforms. You do see that there's a very active set of conversations that happen in the social media environment. And we've also seen that we need to quite often engage on, at that level to ensure that miscommunicated messages can also be dealt with. I think that we've also seen that quite often the national department is expected to respond to something which actually emanates from the province. So we need to ensure also that we equip our members with information. So we want to also look at revamping the website, making sure it carries all of the key policy positions, but also to ensure that our frequently asked questions and also dealt with by the fact sheet on the website. So I'd like to encourage them to go and look at the website, and you'll find that there's a lot of that kind of information that we make available. Quite often we don't always, you know, make the greatest of expectations out there, but we are always open in terms of ensuring that the key issues that are brought to our attention are attended to. We also utilize a lot of the spaces on community radio, where in the national we are able to reach far more of the audiences than traditionally watch your normal channels or, you know, mainline SABC channels and other news channels. And it's in this way that we're able to share. And quite often, I think, because I'm not familiar with the language being spoken, we're not quite sure about the pace. So I think we must guard it just not being too judgmental about the kind of messages going out there. We do have everything that what needs to be communicated can't always be recorded. So we need to use the different ways in which we can communicate success stories. The minister has, in fact, called for post-PM briefings, which after the next week we will be launching the full portfolio committee too. But it's in this time that we will be signaling what exactly the line of margins has been agreed to by all the members of the tribal council, and what will in fact be the watchword, I think, for all of us is that there will be a sector-wide approach rather than provincialized and individualized messages that quite often detract from the core policy positions and implementation strategy of the sector as a whole. Because all of our plans point to our strategic objectives, as well as the non-negotiable, point to better coherence that's required in how we manage what is happening within the sector, and also how we monitor. So media monitoring is an equally important task that is undertaken, and so please appreciate some of what the media change has shown in terms of the successes of sometimes more silence within Charlie Delane for that appreciation and also have a better appreciation of what's happening within provinces as well as at a national scale. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The last question was that on the Honourable Bishop, I think, was about provinces, the four provinces that responded to the CDD change. Just to indicate that we do follow-ups and these matters can be escalated to a higher level, but to report that the many provinces that have been supplying information did so after the court.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members, and Vice DG. On preventing the progress in the implementation of inclusive education, the focus is on, it's mainly going to be on 2013 and 2014. Maybe just to start off as a context, just to give the legislative and policy framework, which is the Constitution, the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, White Paper 6, as well as the conduct policy on accommodations. That is the policy, the recently promulgated policy on conventions. And then from the National Development Plan 2030, there is provision that we need, as DBE, to provide inclusive education to enable every man to participate effectively in a free society, and all other provisions that are linked to that. From White Paper 6, there are directives from White Paper 6 in terms of how we can build an inclusive system. Those are there, and they include putting in place support structures at district and school level, focusing on curriculum development in line with teacher development, and of course, developing an appropriate funding strategy. Just to put inclusive education into perspective in terms of what it is about, what are its intentions and all of it, from studies conducted by Humphrey, there are four critical concepts that constitute what we should view as inclusive education. One, it is presence or attending in the classroom, that's one. Two is acceptance of every learner, irrespective of the differences. Three is participation of every learner in learning and development. And fourthly, it is achievement. Every learner must be encouraged and supported to achieve according to their potential. That is what inclusivity relates to. From a UNESCO definition, it talks about an inclusive education as a response to learner diversity or learner differences, and making sure that we encourage participation, and of course we reduce exclusion, both within and from education. So from the two definitions, it follows logically that the emphasis shifts from special needs focus to talking about removing barriers to learning in an education system. And then I'm moving on to access to education for children with disabilities. This table presents a breakdown of different types of disabilities that are catered for, that are provided with access to education from 2011 to 2013. I think honorable members are going to note that out of the different types of disabilities, the one that is actually highly prevalent is the one on international disability, which amounts to about 60,000, close to 60,000 out of the 111,000 learners in the system with different disabilities. So that's the breakdown per province of different disabilities. We are going to note that Gauteng actually has got the highest numbers of different disabilities that are provided with access to education. There are various reasons for that. Also, Western Cape and KZN to some extent. The issues of resources, resourcing the system to actually provide an inclusive system. And that, in respect of international disability, although it's highly prevalent, but in terms of responding appropriately, DBE has actually reintroduced curriculum differentiation, which is teaching in a differentiated and assessing in a differentiated way. The other disabilities, deafness, blindness, and autism spectrum disorder, are actually small in number, in prevalence, but they are very complex in dealing with. So they require specialized interventions. Enrollment in special schools, according to 2012 data, 111,000 learners from 444 special schools, with close to 10,000 educators and educator learner ratio of about 11 on average. This should actually be providing teachers sitting in special schools with enough time and opportunity to pay individual attention because they are working with small numbers. But again, the quality of education still remains a challenge in most special schools. Full service schools, up to 2014, we have about 291 full service schools or schools converted to be full service schools or be inclusive with 25,000 learners with special needs or learners with disabilities in total. We'll note that Northwest has got the highest number of full service schools, followed by Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Free State, and KZN. And that the enrollment is the highest in full service schools in the Free State. The reason could be in the Free State province. I think almost every school, it is reported that almost every school in the Free State has established a school based support team. I think those things are actually working well. 0 to 4, from birth to 4 year olds, we can notice that from 2009 there has been growth in terms of number of children from birth to 4 years of age with disabilities who access education from 28% to 43%. The numbers are actually, are varying from province to province, obviously because of facilities, availability of facilities and other required resources. It must be noted that while talking about this age group, it's important that we conscientize the public, and especially the parents, with children with disabilities, especially those that are born deaf, blind, and with autistic spectrum disorder, to actually access learning programs as early as possible, preferably as early as age 3, for any intervention. And then 5-year-olds from 2009 to 2013, from 80.5 to 85.2%. Again, we are seeing a steady growth in terms of number of children with disabilities accessing grade R. And then the numbers actually in grade R are the highest in Limpopo, and let me say especially in rural provinces, simply because one can attribute that to issues of poverty, because there is also the nutrition program that is offered. 7 to 15 year old, that is the compulsory school going age. It hasn't grown by much. Actually, from 2009, from 90% to about 92% from 2011, and it has remained steady at about 92% over from 2011 to 2013. And again, the access for these children with disabilities is actually lower. It looks higher because we are talking about only 7.5%. That are not attending or receiving education, but it is still lower than your mainstream learners, which is at about 98%. We want to believe that this growth in access to education for special needs learners is actually due to the implementation of the inclusive education policy. It has created awareness and the conversion of ordinary schools to full service schools has actually expanded access. In terms of access to education for 16 to 18 year olds, we haven't done pretty much that well. From 2009 to 2013, there has been significant growth, however, from 53 to 70%, although the numbers have been fluctuating, but basically because the data comes from the general household survey. One should indicate that the variation in terms of statistics could be attributed to data quality and the definition of different disabilities, which may not be constant and easily understood across the system. Resulting in inclusive education, looking at program for spending in terms of during the 2013-14 year, we'll note that nationally about 5 billion Rand was allocated to program 4. That is That is the budget for special schools, and about 99.6% was spent in the previous financial year. Variations in terms of spending due to capacity and capacity in terms of personnel and maybe credible pay, one can attribute to that, and of course, issues of monitoring the spending. Then in terms of the per lira expenditure in special schools, members are going to appreciate the fact that the per lira expenditure is actually high in special schools. For instance, in the 2013-14 year, it averaged about 54,000, which is much higher than the per capita expenditure in public ordinary schools. But then one would question the returns in those investments. With so much spending going into this. Because there are still remaining challenges or persistent challenges. For instance, inadequate staffing or resourcing in special schools. For instance, specialist professionals. And procuring assistive devices for every learner in special school. Not every learner has the required assistive devices. So again, close monitoring will help. And then there's also the program called Expansion of Implementation, and that is to extend the implementation of White Paper 6 with targeted priority areas from White Paper 6. Only 5 provinces have made allocations over the years. 4 provinces have never made an allocation, which started in 2008. And it will be noted that those provinces that have never made an allocation actually have lagged far behind in terms of implementing those devices. They are there for everybody to see. In terms of availability of health professionals and social services in the system, we do have child care workers, nurses, occupational therapists, physiotherapists, etc. But we have got variations in terms of resources in these categories of health professionals. In some provinces like Limpopo, you get zeros across many types of health professionals. So it is not surprising. But surprisingly, Limpopo did receive for the first time an allocation of 30 million in 2013-14 for the expansion of inclusive education, which is the budget that other provinces that have received it have used to create posts and have resourced their district offices, even up to second level. 2013, the year of inclusive education and development that happened from 2013 or continue to date. Curriculum-related developments, the CAPS for South African Sign Language, that has been developed, finalized, approved, to policy, has become policy, an implementation plan to roll it out from 2015 has been already approved by HECOM. So we need to start with the training of teachers in formation phase in grade 9 who will be implementing the curriculum, hopefully, in 2015. I'm saying hopefully for many reasons. And then in terms of teachers who've been trained, officials and teachers who've been trained in sign language as laws, just to prepare them to be competent in signing, to prepare them to be trained into the curriculum, so that we don't waste time in training them in signing, 886 to date have been trained, especially from last year through to this year. Curriculum for schools of skill, DPE started with the development last year by establishing a steering committee which will oversee the development of 3 learning programs. A learning program for profoundly intellectually disabled learners, a learning program for severely intellectually disabled, and a learning program for mild to moderately intellectually disabled. Developments have happened. A framework for developing the curricula is now in place. 20 subjects for the MID learning program have been listed, and then DBE has actually identified about 83 curriculum writers to start writing those learning programs. So work is in progress. Curriculum differentiation, DPE has come up with institutionalization of curriculum differentiation, simply saying that every teacher in the system, whether you are in a special school or in a mainstream school, you should be able to differentiate every teacher and assess. We think that is critically important. 43 national training team members were trained last year in July, and they have started rolling out curriculum differentiation, targeting firstly the district level to empower the district. Four provinces have actually done the training counting: KZN, Northern Cape, and Western Cape, to actually train district officials across the spectrum. This next slide is actually indicating the number of studied advisors from intermediate state up to FET per province who have been exposed to curriculum differentiation through orientation alongside the CAPS training that happened from 2011 through to 2013, which is close to 10,000 studied advisors. Procurement of LTSM and assistive devices and specialized equipment. Assistive devices, we have different types of devices and equipment, wheelchairs, augmentative and alternative communication for those with learners with language problems or speech problems. Provinces are progressively procuring these, and we have got the numbers in total at the bottom of different types of devices and equipment. We'll notice members are going to notice that about 51.4 special schools have actually done the procurement of assistive devices across provinces. So not all special schools have provided this. Adaptation of workbooks, all grades R-9 workbooks in mathematics and languages were adapted for grading purposes. And then teacher guides have been developed for learners who require AAC, the use of AAC devices, giving them guides to be able to teach those learners, not to actually adapt to the workbooks. The workbooks are fine as they are. They can be taught to those learners, also including learners who are deaf, can use the workbooks as they are. But teachers need to be guided, and those guides have been produced. Braille LTSM 500, grade 1 to 6 mathematics. Braille and toolkits were distributed in 2013. Early in 2014, grades 1 to 3 home language workbooks were distributed to all 32 schools for the blind in all 11 official languages. The selection of textbooks for Braille purposes has been done, it was done in 2012, December, as well as in 2013 by teachers who are teaching in these schools. So that we, as DPE, we put into a catalog textbooks that can be Braille, and provinces actually have been requested to procure from Pioneer Printers the textbooks as they become available. And some provinces have already submitted their orders. And DPE is actually encouraging provinces to provide ICT to expedite access to information for learners with visual impairments, given that it takes a long time to produce material in print. Teacher development activities in terms of early identification and early intervention in learning difficulties, DBE has finalized the review of the screening tool, which is called CIAS, and it is now being prepared for approval to policy, so that it's going to be rolled out throughout the system, probably from 2015 going forward. And one would like to highlight some partnerships in this respect, especially that through the partnership between DPE and DSC, there is an e-health project that is piloted at Coffin Valley. This is a screening tool. Mm-hmm. It's an innovation that has been developed. Data can be shared even through the use of cell phones. So professional nurses have been trained in this. And we believe as DPE that this is going to provide relief, especially in rolling out this screening program, because it requires intensive human resource like health professionals, therapists, etc., whom we don't have as a system. So by employing the use of this innovation and rolling it out, especially in many rural provinces, I think the implementation will be expedited or enhanced. Sometimes the schools and special schools guidelines have been developed by the system. Teams from provinces were trained to roll out the training to guide the entire system in terms of roles and responsibilities of Fulton schools and where they could get support for them to include every learner in learning and development. The same with special schools to improve the quality of education in special schools. How can that be improved? There are guidelines and provinces have started this year to actually train district officials and then they will take it further to the school level. Specialized teacher training, 594 teachers only now. I recorded about 881, which included teachers and officials. But specifically with teachers, 594 were trained in SASL as laws, and 37 teachers from 16 of the 22 special schools for the blind were trained in curriculum adaptation and grade 1 drill. And we have, for DPE has a partnership with University of Victoria, which is going to assist to roll out further training in the areas of visual impairment, which includes the utilization of assistive devices because teachers struggle with that, curriculum adaptation, understanding eye conditions, orientation and mobility, managing brain production plans at school level. And through the DBE, ETDP CETA, there is a partnership between DBE and the ETDP CETA. There will be a pilot of trained teachers in autism, about 50 teachers, in terms of how they can mediate the effects of autism and therefore get learners participating in education. Teachers and officials trained in Braille about 311, but would not, honourable members will notice that there are provinces that have not done their training during 2013-14. But in total, nationally, about 311 teachers and officials were exposed to that. In terms of best practices from provinces, Northern Cape has actually developed a comprehensive full service school in a place called Clainsea in partnership with DBS. It's almost an abandoned area with infrastructure available. It's going to be everything. It's like, as the word would say, it's a kind of a still plus full service school. It's the best of its kind. Western Cape has actually already procured specialized equipment for all its five schools for the deaf to prepare for the implementation of the sign language curriculum. And also Western Cape has put in place multidisciplinary teams which provide outreach programs even to full service schools, special schools, and even centers which are registered with the Department of Health, which are housing profoundly intellectually disabled children who are not attending school. And of course, I've mentioned about Free State that almost every school in the Free State province has a school-based support team. And we believe that those structures are working in supporting teachers and learners. And then maybe finally, just to say something about Northwest. Northwest is only prompt in terms of responding. Whatever information you request, whatever data you request, the first prompt to respond. In our view, it could be that it has got all good systems in place, so it won't delay in terms of responding. Challenges, it's important to note that for us as DBE to successfully develop an inclusive system, we require a multidisciplinary approach. We need different disciplines and integrated planning. We believe that another challenge is that maybe we haven't quite coordinated stakeholder participation in the course of developing an inclusive system. There are still disparities or incoherence in terms of how inclusive education is understood and its intentions, even within DBE itself, and that plays itself out in terms of the approaches that provinces use to develop an inclusive system, and of course, even the resourcing, some don't even see it as much of a priority, and therefore don't provide resources. In adequate resourcing, I've already mentioned that shortage of specialized skills among teachers in dealing with disabilities, and special professionals are largely employed by Department of Health and Social Development, and we have very few as a department. Maybe as concluding remarks from the Education for All Global Monitoring Report of the Challenges Sonsu, Quality of Education, the message that is contained in this closing remark is that countries need to develop inclusive approaches to make sure that we address the threat of vulnerable learners, and we actually beat the issue of inequality in the system so that we can meet our 2015 target, which is the Millennium Development Goal, talking about every child of school-going age accessing education in all countries that have ratified the Education for All Convention. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mila. But the question that you have raised, of which before I even open up, let me take it back to what are the intentions of inclusive education and how are we going to ensure that we all understand that? Because really the presentation is good, but this is not what you're getting. This, you know, I think even if you can ask us all here to define what inclusive education is, that means we get different understanding, different expectations. From your own side, do you have the DDG? What is inclusive education? Tell us now. Let us have a common understanding. What are they in the intentions? What is it that you wish to see that any job of inclusive education in South Africa? Then go to all these percentages of which we have a lot of questions about, but can we get a common understanding?
Will the Honourable Chair want me to respond right away? I'm here to Mr. Moni.
Professor Milani is closer to definition, but maybe let me come and do the teaching. There's a difference between inclusive education as a modality of providing education and taking an inclusive education. Now, the reason why you would understand that, but why are these things doing? Oh. Now, you'll appreciate that we moved from the mode of the sort of dealing with learners with special needs, support in terms of special education needs, as special schools, and we said we'll adopt and that's the modality of an inclusive education approach, which is about mainstream, so minor intended. The disability is not in the instrument, but in the maintenance of the instrument. Now, I was saying the issue was about mainstreaming minor or mild disabilities. Now, the problem is that, in fact, Dr. Similar will tell you that the majority of the learners with special education needs are not in special schools. The minister made an example yesterday that one MP visited a school and observing at assembly discovered that not even one child was wearing a pair of spectacles. And that in itself says that this learner had not gone to screen, which means that in fact, after an intervention was brought in and learners were screened, it was discovered that 30% of those learners needed to receive support in terms of classes. Now that's the example, just one example that I'm giving. Now our understanding of learners with special education needs is that these are learners in your special schools and so on. And that's the narrow definition of the inclusive education. Inclusive education, as Dr. Zimlani indicated, as the definition goes, is about removing barriers to learning. Because I think he also covered areas that show different types of barriers. Some are inherent in the system, and you find them in different ways. Some, of course, are physiological within how these learners present themselves. But it is the responsibility of a system to deal with these barriers to learning. When learners are unable to learn in the manner that they should, it's not the fault of the learners. is the fault of the system. That is the philosophy behind the inclusive education system. I'm sure that the management said.
No, it's fine. You, okay, you can add, but I was just going to say, let me open up for questions, because definitely we're still going to answer, because we want to know who identified those things, because as a teacher, it's not even a question to do that. So, to whom are we leaving up at for the situation? So, that is fine. Let me open up to the members. Honorable Basson, Honorable Boshop, Honorable Fanelman, Honorable Mashabela. Those are the points that I've just mentioned.
You know, this section of inclusive education, according to what paper says, is so broad that sometimes, as Chairperson has said, sometimes you wonder the question whether are we doing justice to schools. We are identifying schools to be full service schools. And after identifying them, we leave them just no support. I have been rousing the question that is asked to the minister from parliament to break down the support services or psychologists and social workers that are allocated per district. I have noticed that there are so few or none social workers per province. You see, per district as a different maybe with 100 and something schools, you notice there's one social worker. With all these problems, how are these schools going to be supported by one person having this challenge of educators not being trained? And they even trained, for how long are they trained to cope with the multiples of challenges that the learners have in order to be placed, to be in place, and they should be identified as inclusive learners? We used to say they are inclusive learners. And even those schools that are identified as full service schools, some of those schools are already overpopulated. You will find that a teacher with learners of 50 something in the class, you have these inclusive learners in your class. How can the teacher cope without any assistance? I have noticed that you have also given the procurement of assistive devices in some provinces. They have procured these assistive devices. But I have noticed even my province is one of them, where the 00, all those devices. Is it not an authentic? Is it not because they have not, or is it because they have not complied to your what, or is that you are still going to give them devices? And you will notice that sometimes inclusive learners that are transferred to school services are really not learners that are educable, are learners that belong to special schools. Because your area or in the place, and then most of the places, there is no special school for learners with disabilities. So you find that in your full service schools are dumping sites without support. And how, my question is now, how do you assist the schools that we have identified, and of which there are so few, whether they in the learners with challenges, are so many and spread across
according to APFUMD.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Dr. Somalani, a question was posed and answers were given. Sign language educators in home language, only 92 out of the 579 are available. What are you going to do to be able to bridge this challenge facing you? And how many of these 92 teachers are teaching in the foundation phase? Because this is where the basis has to be set. And we only have 92. I cannot think that there's even one in the foundation phase. You speak of education is there to provide knowledge and skills, but without the necessary support, we're not going to assist our learners with special needs. And then slide 10, you speak of educator-learner ratio 11. What is the weight factor? If it's 1 to 4, it gives you 44 learners per educator. That's just not on in special needs schools. Do these educators have any assistance like a paraprofessional or an assistant to assist them? And then 17, 18, I'm sure I have so many questions to ask, but you can just ask them all. The learner expenditure, you said that in the special needs school it is much higher than in the mainstream. Could you give us the breakdown? And then I wish to differ with you. You say the return on investment is questionable. Whether you've got a disability or not, you need to be educated. So we must not go down that avenue. ECD practitioners, in slide 20, you speak of ECD practitioners. We don't even have enough in the grade R area. How are we going to assist our four-year-olds in this instance if we can't even assist our grade R's? And then slide 32, the expenditure and over-expenditure in Mpumalanga province is very, very questionable, and I would like to see some intervention put in place. I mean, Mpumalanga has overspent with 124%. This just shows that they don't have quality stuff in place, and that's also very concerning. Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Gee, sorry, I would like to go back. It's not really part of the presentation, but maybe just an update if there are any info on the Tipotolwani school near Hamaklala in Polokwane that was supposed to go to the Wiki school in Mankweng. And then, there are a lot of questions under the LSTM, of course, of these learners. And if you look at one or two provinces with a lot of zeros, then that becomes even more worrisome. But if you will allow me, Chair, just to go back, because OSG is not really part of this, but on the budget, just in the previous presentation, there was a few million allocated to OSG. And I've got to ask, I just want to know, if we allow for OSD, does that mean that we are going to take our students who are doing their so-called Zuma practical year in OSD? Because what I find is that we make provision for it at the national level, but when it comes to provinces don't have funding for that year for the OSD and other students. So how are we then having OSD at our school? In the provinces, because I can give a list of examples of OSD students that can't be placed because there's no provision for them. But I see we made a provision of 313 million rand in the conditional grant. How does that work? What's that for? Thank you, Chief.
One is only one question. What is the department going to do? Thank you. What is the government going to do to ensure that all public schools have sufficient facilities, infrastructure, including remedial teachers, to deal with learners with special education needs?
I think on page 5 there is a bullet that says that there are a lot of teachers without specialized qualifications, even though there is a budget. And I think that it's not a new matter. The department, what are you doing with it? Because really there must be something. If we really are committed to seeing that inclusive education happening. And the other point would, I would like to find out on the issue of expenditure, where you are saying that provinces like the Northwest, Northern Cape, and Eastern Cape have reflected nothing on that slide, that is on page 16. Maybe you can explain why they haven't been anything indicated that didn't they get any budget, or if they have people, I would assume that for sure that they have people who fall under the category. And then also to check on the 5 provinces that you are talking about out of the 9 that have allocated the budget, what are you doing with the kids that do not get the attention, the appropriate attention in terms of the budget allocated for this? It's a bit disturbing to find a point like this, but as you know that there are people who really need the facility. And then is it the third question, Chairperson, is to ask a question, whether does it suggest that a lot of people who are in need of this facility are in the 5 stated provinces that regularly report, like Mpumalanga, Western Cape, Northern Cape, Gauteng, and the Free State? Does it mean that they have got more people who are, I don't know what to call them, but who qualify for this type of service? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for the questions. Dr. Sumela, you are very much uncertain with the implementation of CAPS in 2015. Why not? Why is it so? I'm even very hopeful, you know the change has been done. Why are we not accepting this today? This is going to happen. And you said that the most prevalent disability is that of intellectual. I know I might not be clear then on how to categorize them. But I also believe most of that number are the ones that you find in the full service schools and other than getting them in the special schools. I think everyone has been worried about the training of the teachers to cater for this. Really, there is a member who said, I can't remember, who said, we sometimes make these inclusive schools a dining area for the learners, and indeed, it is so. I think there is something that we need to do with them, no matter how mild the situation is, but mostly our teachers, we look even at the numbers of teachers that have been trained to deal with these special cases. It's very limited, really, for the challenges that we have as a country. On Program 5, on the presentation that we had, in Northern Cape was one of the provinces where each department we have said the issues of psychological issues with mental alcohol syndrome, where our levels are being said. You said it's one of the provinces that is leading. I'm not sure whether you're saying it's leading or
one of the problems that you have just chosen to do, that they, it is taken care of. I am very much interested because the records that we have, I remember Western Cape was one of the provinces that was leading much on that one. Or are we saying we have done much in other provinces, we are only focusing in the Northern Cape? Or what might be the cause of that? I don't know when really it has overtaken in Western Cape. Dr. Simelane, I was very much really the issue of percentages that you are coming up with, they are good. But for me, as I go out of this hall, of this committee room, to explain these percentages that you are talking about in various provinces, I think it can be a little bit of a problem today. It's 42%, but I don't know whether you understand me. Okay, let me make an example. Okay, access to educator, the education 5-year-olds, 17 to 15. Firstly, the way I'm worried is the drop of the access in some of the provinces, you know, it's dropping. I would say, what does that mean? And the 95.6, is the 95.6 or Kabani? Do you understand it, Dr. Simelane? Really, I can't explain it. Yes, yeah. If ever you can try and clarify for me what are these percentages referring to, I'll be very much interested. You know, last time, the communities in the Western Cape, there were parents that were very concerned coming up to Parliament to complain on the role that they play when it comes to a special school and their learners are still having going to the schools. Referring to the quality of teachers and the bulk of work that is supposed to be done by them as parents. And I know in your presentation, one of the things that you have outlined is the lack of parental involvement and adequate involvement thereof. How do you bring in the parents? Because we know these learners are, they need the special attention in at home. Really, I think for you to bring in that element of parental involvement and training within the parents themselves, can access any way of doing that from the department itself. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, DG and Chair and honorable members. I'll start with the one that I'm going to share them between myself and Mr. Simelane and DG. Let me start by saying, honorable members, maybe we need to remind each other that education for learners with special education has been a thing that of the previous government and was even a thing that in the current government until about 3, 4, 5 years ago. And Dr. Simelane can attest to that. The minister made this admission in the National Assembly and said there are two areas that were Cinderella. It was the rural education and multi-grade schools, and you'd be happy to learn that a unit has now been created to focus on rural education and multi-grade schools. The second one was education for learners with special education needs. Even with the advent of white paper 6, progress was made, but not as much. It's for that reason that 2013 was prepared as the year of inclusive education. Now, when we present to our peers, whether it's in this country or outside this country, people are surprised. They are saying, you have achieved what the United Nations, you have achieved in 20 years what the United Nations could not achieve in 25 years. That was the figure that was presented at first very recently. That giving them the progress that we have made in terms of inclusive. So I'm saying some of the stark reality, sometimes when you become truthful to people, you do it at your own peril. You give them the truth, you get to see the truth, and some will choose either to appreciate the progress that you have made or you can give that against you. But at any rate, you've chosen to give you the truth, the facts, as they are. Let me quickly just try and maybe respond to the questions that have been raised by honorable members, but I thought it would be important to appreciate the fact that we don't come very far. It's only a progress of 20 years, and some of the people are there indeed we have made that progress. Now, Honorable Basson indicated that in terms of the support to full-service schools, indeed you don't have the requisite number of psycho and social services workers. Now, the scarcity of this expertise is not only pertinent to education. It's a problem in the whole country. In fact, it's for that reason that government has introduced a program where you get free bursaries, you get a bursary scheme rather, for you to study in this area, to be a social worker, to be a psychologist. People are invited to get in here. Because even this aspect that we have on the count are not enough for all of us, let alone schools. So I'm just saying, your observation is spot on. We need more of them. We used to produce quite a number of this expertise until we decided to cut them like we did with teachers. Now we have a chronic need of them in the whole country, in different services, including schools. So indeed, we don't have enough of them. We share them with our communities, and that is still not enough. And then I also agree with you. Some of the learners who do not belong to the schools are being dumped in the schools. And it's for that reason that we are trying to strengthen the provision of education. And over the past 20 years, our focus has been on the academic stream and the technical stream. We are saying systems that work, like education systems in Germany and other countries, they've got three streams. You've got the academic pathway, you've got a technical vocational, and you've got a vocational occupational, which is the skills progress for learners who are unable to cope with the training. Now, over the past 2 years, our focus has been on two. Now, we're bringing in the third stream, and Dr. Milano will tell you that we have developed an SPS level 1 qualification and a curriculum, and we are meeting with human resources to finalize that process. So that learners who are unable to cope with the two are also provided in the third stream, and then it would be an inclusive education. At the moment, it is not successful. And then, Honorable Bosho. Yeah, maybe you want to speak. Teachers who are qualified, and again, given our history and our background, many of the teachers who taught in the schools were not suitably qualified. And I'm not saying this for the first time. We presented a similar report, which was much more earlier than even what is presented to the Honorable Chair, if you remember, you remember that of that committee. We presented a detailed report, which was worse than what you see today. And indeed, we confirmed that many of these teachers were not suitably qualified. And they have now enrolled many of them with our development through Funza Lushaka and other programs to make sure that they are suitably qualified. So that acknowledgement we made, but it must be seen against the background of the programs that we are making. And how many are teaching in the foundation phase? If we have the figure Dr. Simulani will share with you, if we don't, we could make that information available to you. And the issue of return for investment. I understood Dr. Kralis to be saying, Honorable Bosho, getting a return for the investment is making sure that these children who are in these schools and everywhere else access education in the best manner possible. That's how you get a return for the investment. No, it doesn't mean that by investing in these schools you don't get a return for investment. We want quality education. These children deserve to get quality education from the teacher. And that's the reason for investment that we are talking about. And then the ratio of, there's a weakening that they are using, Dr. Milano will speak to that. And then the issue of ECD practitioners We do acknowledge that we also there as part of people are suitably qualified. I agree with your observation that we don't have enough. But we have to share the ones that we have. These learners will not suffer because they happen to be learners with certain education. So but I agree with you that we need to work very hard to produce more of these practitioners. And the same is in Mpumalanga. Now, honorable members, share you part of the team that went to Mpumalanga and other provinces. And many of you appreciated the work that was done by Mpumalanga and others, including Northern Kenya. Many of this is last year. We went to these provinces, and when we presented the report to you, you said to us, indeed, we have seen some of the things that they are putting to us. We have seen them with our own eyes. It could be that there are other things, but truly speaking, Mpumalanga is one of those leading provinces in terms of the rollout of the inclusive education. There could be other issues, but if you compare with other provinces, Mpumalanga is doing well. The Honorable Van der Walt, learners who have moved from one school to the other, I don't know whether Dr. Semilan would got that information. Maybe we could respond. If we don't, then we'll have to go back and get it and get it back to you. And then Honorable Machabela. What are we going to do to ensure that all public schools receive resources and facilities that they need, including learners with special education needs? Honorable member, our constitutional role is to monitor and support provinces. And what we are doing, as part of the report that we have shared with you, is to give you a picture emerging from the work that we do. We continue to engage with provinces at various levels in an attempt to assist. I don't want to go back to the challenges of the concurrent process. You can't force provinces to do certain things that you want them to do. We can only persuade them, to tell them to do certain things and support them. But what we usually do, this report, we share at CEM, we show it at RECOM, and we persuade HODs and MECs to make sure that learners are not shortchanged by virtue of being located in a particular province. Honorable Mukoto, teachers without the requisite knowledge and skills, I think I spoke to that one. This is part of our history going forward. We are addressing it, and I would implore honorable members to keep watch for the progress that we are making. If we don't move as fast as we should, I know that we will feel no pressure. Where there's no information, Dr. Sulani can speak to that. Maybe it could be that the province was not ready with the information, or probably the current nothing. Learners who do not benefit from this budget, well, that's the third part of the story. If the province or the district fail to spend the money, it's the learners who suffer at the end of the day. So what I have explained earlier on is what we're trying to do with provinces, to persuade them and to get them to spend, because if they don't spend, the consequences hit the learners. And then, Honorable Gina, I don't know, maybe Dr. Simran will tell you why he's not overly optimistic that we implement in 2015 South African Sign Language.
Yes, I know. We should be implementing. I can see DG has got constant headaches because we keep asking for money from him, like throwing water from a rock. Well, the other one is about most prevalent disabilities, and I think part of it is just really to make sure that education is accessible to learners, but not to expect learners to learn in the way that we expect them. I hope honorable members get my point. You know, the three streams will help to meet them, all of them, in terms of their needs, instead of forcing them to learn where their ability cannot afford them to do so. And then some special schools in dancing sites, I concur with that, and we are correcting that. Program 5, not the case leading, Dr. Simulani will explain. Percentages. Now, as Dr. Simulani indicated, we're getting these numbers from the household staff. The percentage there in our understanding and our interpretation, is the percentage of learners who are in institutions against those who are supposed to be attending. I hope it makes sense. You work out the percentage on the number of learners who should be attending against those who are attending. Then it gives you access. And then the parental involvement, I'm sure Dr. Simulano gives you that. Thank you, Didi.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Didi. Maybe I'm going to start from most of the questions that have actually been responded to by Mr. Mweli, and thank you very much for that. But in terms of some learners in full service schools being ineducable, a response to that is we have to look at what the admissions policies say, the admissions policy of the department. The admissions policy in respect of children with special needs states specifically that children with special education needs must be admitted in public ordinary schools, that is your mainstream schools, as far as that is practicable. But in a situation where it is not practicable, the school will be unable to support the child. Then the child must refer to the head of department to actually look for an alternative school for the child. It doesn't talk about special school, even with children with special education. It talks about mainstream schools. And then it goes further to say it is the responsibility of the head of department to make sure that an assessment of a child with special education needs is conducted involving concerned professionals at a prospective school as a matter of agency, so that a child accesses education in an alternative school. And that is actually, in my view, a function that is, that the head of department delegates to the district office, the district level. So that's why we keep talking about children in waiting lists, not waiting to get to special schools. But on ourselves, and they say there is no waiting list. There's nowhere where the admissions policy talks about creating waiting lists. It's very clear. So in other words, any child can go to any school, local school preferably, and support must be provided to ensure that the child receives education. And of course, what BBE has done to create these skills programs, to develop them, which are currently under development, is to make sure that every learner is given an option and can benefit from it, as Mr. Wendy has actually indicated. About the 92 teachers for sign language, those are teachers that in the system are currently qualified in SASL and they are competent. They have got formal qualifications. It's actually 92. Honorable Bishop is actually correcting that. But it's not necessarily talking to children, teachers' information phase. The audit that BPE did last year in all schools for the deaf actually revealed that there are 351 teachers who are teaching information phase in schools for the deaf. So the numbers are there. And those are the teachers who have to be trained before the end of this year, trained in the curriculum now to be able to implement it next year at foundation phase level. So the, I think that answers the question about how will the gap be bridged. Teachers will all be trained, even those that are qualified in signing are competent. Will it be trained because the curriculum is new, it has never existed before. Everybody is going to be taken through that.
We're implementing 11 official languages. So how many are trained in home language?
how many are trained in sign language?
In home language. Sign language.
In
I know, but you have to, there is a different perspective in it. But I'll address the question to you guys a little bit later.
Yeah, I do allow you to meet up there, Dr. Samina.
If I may respond, let me just tell a bit of background, actually not much, just to say that when the Capital Sign Language curriculum were developed, they were developed at home language level, using English as home language as a framework, so that then you can match all the fields that are developed through offering a home language level. So sign language is actually at home language level. In terms of training, they will have to be trained at home language level so that they can offer it at that level. So in terms of development, one believes that in terms of Department of Arts and Culture, as well as PANCAL, they currently could be developing sign language to a level of becoming an official language of government, so that it adds to the 11. But in terms of implementing this curriculum, it's going to be implemented at home language level for training. Then in terms of ECD practitioners, Mr. Moni has responded to that, but I may just want to add that what is happening, especially in most special schools, there are learners children with disabilities who are admitted as early as age 3, especially those who are deaf, those who are born blind, and are admitted to special schools and are given these ECD programs to prepare them, to give them the language that they will need when they get to school. So to some extent, the shortage of practitioners and the quality of early learning programs from birth to age 4, that is mediated by that provision of some of the special schools across provinces. And actually, the South African Schools Act allows, and in fact, I think it's NAMPA, that allows ministers to actually provide regulations for early entry into school for certain learner population. In terms of the Sitoto Nwanen issue, progress. All learners from Sitoto Nwanen are supposed to be moved to the school, as Honorable Sandoval has actually indicated. But the movement has not happened to date. However, there have been developments to an amount of about 10 million rand, which are sent to the host school to prepare for the relocation of learners, because Sitoto Nwanen has been identified by the provincial department as one of those schools that require rebuilding, total demolition and rebuilding concerns. And I think there is budget allocated to that. What there have been internal consultation challenges in the province, which has led to the delay of relocating the learners. But the plan is there, everything is there, even the infrastructure plan has been drawn up, if everything is actually ready. So there are a few impacts that need to be resolved within the province. Maybe honorable members will be encouraged to know that that matter has been escalated to the NEC in Limpopo to find the solution. LTSM, that's an assistive devices that provinces don't have, and equipment. Well, it's the disparities in terms of how provincial departments are resourced. Because at the moment, DPE is developing the funding norms. So once the norms are finalized, I think they will guide provincial departments in terms of how to resource for inclusive education, which will include procurement of LTSM and assistive devices as well. I think that response actually goes to the question that Honorable Mashabela has actually asked as a question in terms of what would be done to resource schools. And the department is
DDE is developing funding norms. Basically, the funding norms that are coming up, maybe it's too early to talk about them, but the draft has been completed. It actually talks to the two categories of public schools. It talks to public ordinary schools, which full service schools are part of. How are they going to be resolved in terms of non-capital, non-personnel expenditure? And then it also talks to special schools. How will special schools be funded to come up with the norm? So that's standardizing the funding of an inclusive education and training system broadly. I think that is going to actually empower provinces to respond appropriately so that we eliminate the disparities that are actually happening. And therefore, every learner in the system gets to be supported appropriately. Well, there's also an issue of staffing norms, which where we have made slow progress, but it's work in progress as well. How do you come up with staffing norms? I'm talking about staffing norms because once you talk about post-provisioning norms, we are free to think about teachers only. But in this case, for an inclusive system, you also need health professionals. You also need all forms of assistance, hostel staff, and all of that. So DBE is working on how can we provide those, even at district level, as well as at school level. At district level, at the backdrop of the promulgation of the policy on the reorganization roles and responsibilities of districts, there is a provision within that policy, which was promulgated last year, which talks about the resourcing of district offices in a manner that you have got transversal teams, you have got officials responsible for different pointers. And then in terms of teachers without specialized skills, Minamoni has responded to that, Honorable Mokoto. I can only just add that DBE has been implementing a training program from 2011 through to 2014, towards the end of this year. And the training program has focused mainly on visual impairment and also on sign language, empowering teachers who are teaching in these types of schools. And the majority of schools, provinces have actually made funding available and offer those teachers bursaries, and they are even attending courses at universities. VAS is one of the universities. University of Pretoria is one of the universities. You get teachers from the ECMC traveling to University of Pretoria and being trained in sign language. And even in AAC, for those learners with language and speech problems. So the progress being made in that regard. Let me just say, in terms of the five provinces that have received allocation, allocation for expansion of inclusive education, the others that where there is nothing provided because there has never been any allocation from 2008. So it's a provincial letter in relation to the provincial treasury. We supported provinces in terms of how to spend and support learners by providing them with business plans. Maybe coming to the question from the chair about intentions of inclusive education. Inclusive education is looking at how does an education system make sure that every learner is education for all. That is what it is about. It is a right-based kind of education and intervention. How do we as a system respond to the needs of each and every learner to make sure that every learner participates in learning and development, and they achieve? They are not just in the system for purposes of statistics, but they benefit from that. That's what inclusive education is about. And there are various areas. That is why we are not only talking about special needs. Today, we move from special needs to barriers to learning. We are not saying disabilities all of a sudden are not important, but what we are saying is that it is not, from a pedagogical perspective, it's not important for a teacher to know how a disability comes about. All we need to know from assessors is
how does a particular disability act as a barrier to learning, and therefore what would be the intervention strategy to bring the impact and all other forms of barriers to learning for that matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we are moving towards an era where there is no child with disability that are being hidden. And that those are things that we still experience. We go back to our communities, that is what we find. Maybe others have never been exposed to that. So really, I think the way that is happening, we are trying to resolve that. Let us free those children who are just unfortunate to be born with whatever disability that is, they could be born with. And again, one area where care system must play a very important role is to say it's not a case to have a child born with whatever disability that is there, but there is so much that the government has engaged to make sure that these children become accessible members of whatever community and whatever society. So really, with those ways, we would love to see this issue of inclusive education with barriers being eradicated so that every child can be educated in whatever level that he or she has got the potential to do so. So we'll be following up on this one definitely. We are very interested in it. Thank you ever so much for the presentation.
Another point, the last point, is after they graduate, where do they go? Because their schooling duration is very short. So really, I think I'm very interested to know about this. Maybe it can be a relatable thing or something that is taken up in the next visit by that section in the department chairperson, because I think there must be a plan of that sort. Because for other students, we talk about them going to tertiary, and then what about them? Thank you.
We'll plan for another presentation next year. Thank you very much. Thank you. From the
CFO. Thank you, Honorable Chair. It was on the OSG for therapy. This allocation, the purpose of it was to just augment the baseline of provincial education department for the compensation budget of therapists, counselors, and psychologists in the education sector. If you remember when you're presenting
the profession of the
The allocation in 2014-15, we have only two allocations, 2014-15 and 2015-16. The one in 2014-15 is just for the back pay for the collective agreement that was signed on OSD. And then the next one is 2015-16. After that, this allocation will go to the part of the equitable share in provinces after it has been normalized for this OSD.
Thank you.